Nation Singapore podcast. We hope you'll enjoy this message by Pastor Joey Bonifacio.
We began this series by talking about the idea of volatility. And we've seen how oil prices have dropped and how even our own service evaporated right before our eyes. We reference Isaiah chapter 43 in discussing that, and you can listen to that message once again. And then we said last week that volatility has caused levels of uncertainty, and we referenced Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 1 to 11, that God has plans for us in the midst of all this uncertainty. The fact of the matter is, when there's volatility and uncertainty, the next thing that will happen is there will be complexity. When you have 7 billion people who all need to live, eat, dress, and find homes, and are in different places with jobs being volatile and situations being uncertain, you will have complexity up ahead. How does complexity happen? How does life get complex, or how does it get complicated? Well, for starters, we start out with certain essentials in life. As we move forward in life, those essentials are, so certain things are added to those essentials, and they're non-essentials, but they add on to the complexity of life. As we add the essentials or the non-essentials, there are trappings that are added to these essentials and non-essentials. And then you have the popular things that surface. And some of these popular things and trappings become practices. Hence, the result is a complicated life or complexity. Complexity happens. And today, because of COVID-19, we're not just living in terms of complexity. We have extreme complexity. Extreme complexity is the situation we're faced today. The antidote for complexity is simplicity. And today I want to talk to you about a story about the book of Nehemiah, something that nothing can be more complex than the situation. The people of Israel are returning back from exile. The whole city of Jerusalem is burned down. The doors are burnt down, the walls have been broken down, and other people are now residing in the very land that they used to possess. The book of Nehemiah is a dark book. It talks about spies and betrayal. It talks about warfare in a very vulnerable, volatile, uncertain, and very complex ways. It begins in Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 1, the words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. In the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, while I was in the city of the citadel of Susa. These are the words of this man. Hanani, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men. And I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem. Notice that these men came from Israel and he was in Susa. And he began to question them about the remnant that had survived the exile. We talked about this last week, where God told, or Jeremiah, the prophet, by nature of the letter, told the people who were exiled in Babylon, survive. And now he says that also about Jerusalem, the situation of the people in Jerusalem, not just the people, but the city itself. Now notice in verse 3 it says, they said to me, those who survived the exile are back in the province, but they're in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire. This is a complex situation. When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned. And this is what we talked about 2 weeks ago, where there's a place of grief because his city and the people are in complex situations and in deep trouble. Next thing he does is he fasted and prayed to the God of heaven. Notice what he does in the midst of all this bad news. He goes and does the essential. He prays. Prayer is one of the most basic things you can do whenever you find yourself in a place of complexity. The second thing he does is found in verse 8. Remember the instruction you gave your servant Moses. Notice that he did not just pray in a complex situation, he meditated on the word. The point in saying all of this is when you find yourself in complex situations, the first step you need to do is to go back to the essentials. How do you go back to the essentials in a world of complexity? Well, the secret is to identify the non-essentials. When you don't identify the non-essentials, it'll be very, very hard to figure out how do I go back to the essentials. Determining the non-essentials begins with identifying trappings. The 1828 dictionary defines trappings as a noun. They're defined as ornaments or external, superficial decorations, as in trappings of life itself. Life can accumulate ornaments, external, superficial decorations, or things that are not really of any value or use. A good example of this is clothing. Clothing is essential. Fashion is not. And what happens is when you start living with the non-essentials, you complicate matters. Now, that's not to say that fashion is not good. It's just not essential. Food is essential. Some other food are not. In other words, we have had a situation where we've complicated life by adding non-essentials and trappings over those non-essentials. I went to the supermarket a week ago, and as I was walking, I tried to see how much of these were essentials and how much of these were not. And by the way, what is essential to someone who has kids is not essential to somebody like me who's a grandfather and an empty nester. We all differ. The point in saying that is I walked through the aisles, it wasn't very simple to distinguish what was essential and what was not. In fact, it's what's quite complicated. How do you then determine what is essential and non-essential? Well, the key is to identify the timeless. The timeless is what is essential. When life becomes volatile, uncertain, and complicated, you want to go with the timeless, the enduring, the things that are proven. A good example of this is our families. Our families are enduring. They're forever. We're going to have our families. We're born into one. And eventually, when you, as a pastor of over 30 years, I've found that every time someone is dying, the only people around that bed are families. But the fact is, sometimes we put ornaments and travel and vacation and all sorts of things are non-essentials. The essential thing is the family. The non-essential thing is a trip to Europe, for example. Now, exercise is essential. A Fitbit, probably not. Now, as I tread on this very thin ice, I kind of we're all different. Some of the things that you think are essential, that's the point of this message, is only you can discern what is essential. I want to let you know that your work or your job, as essential as you think it is not timeless. In fact, it could be volatile and disappear tomorrow, and when it does happen, you now realize that your job is not as timeless as you think it is. Your livelihood is timeless. And God will give you a source of livelihood in the midst of the time when your job is evaporated. And that's the point. The point is to look for the essential, the enduring, and that's the timeless. If not, the eternal. For instance, church, as we've seen it, has evaporated. Faith is eternal. Giant screens and lights, probably not essential and not enduring. Worship is timeless. An electric guitar, a drum set, and a keyboard, probably not essential. Prayer is enduring. Going to a building to pray, probably not essential. Fellowship is essential. And you could do that any which way you want to because these are the timeless, the essential. And when we drive ourselves towards going back to the essential, we're identifying the non-essentials. And that's not easy. That's not for me to tell you what's essential to you. That's for you to figure out so that you can live a life of simplicity in the midst of a complex, volatile, uncertain world that we live in. The second key, or the third key rather, is to focus now on those essentials. Once you've identified the timeless, now you can focus on them. A good way to understand focus is a camera. A camera needs focusing. When you adjust the lenses of a camera, what you get is focus. Focus enables you to see things more clearly and identify the things that demand your focus because they are, at the end of the day, timeless. Your spiritual life is timeless. When you go and pray and meditate on the word and proclaim what Jesus did for you, those are essentials to your faith. When you fellowship with other believers, your faith is strengthened because those are like going back to the key essentials of a spiritual life. Your relational life is essential. Finding those key relationships, building trust, loving one another, being patient, communicating, listening to one another, and focusing on those relationships are critical in a volatile, uncertain, complex world. Your physical life is vital, essential. Knowing what to eat and not to eat, knowing when to sleep and how to exercise on a more regular basis in the midst of this volatile, uncertain, complex world is essential. Your livelihood, whatever that may be, is essential in this hour. Focus is pulling all of those into the center while disposing of all the others. It's pulling all the other things that will create almost like a laser focus that will allow you to grow in the essentials. Question for you today, have you identified the non-essentials from the timeless? Have you taken the time, and I assure you, it is not easy, as I've even tried to do that. I've found that in my own personal life, I have so many ornaments, so many trappings, that as I move forward in this season, I begin to identify they're not as essential as I thought they were. What are they? And finally, what decisions are you making to focus on the timeless? Simplicity is really more than just going back to the essentials. The story of Nehemiah in chapter 1, verse 11 continues, where Nehemiah prays to God, "Let your ear be attentive to the prayer of this servant and the prayer to the prayer of your servants." He was praying to God and saying, "Lord, listen, I'm doing this. I'm going back to the basics. I'm going back to the essential, and I'm praying to you." Notice prayer is mentioned a number of times in this one chapter because prayer is essential. He says, "Give your servant success today." This was his prayer. "Give me success in the midst of this volatile, uncertain, and very complex situation I'm facing." And he says this, "By granting me favor in the presence of this man." Who is this man? Now, then he goes on to say, "I was the king's cupbearer." The king's cupbearer is the guy who basically takes the wine that the king, or drinks that the king, before he drinks it first just to make sure that there's no poison in it. And then after he drinks it, he gives it to the king to make sure the king is not assassinated through poison. And that was this man's job. He was the cupbearer of this king. And he was praying to God and saying, "God, give me favor and have success in the presence of this man." Simplicity is not just going back to the essentials. It's knowing what you have, defining what you have. Nehemiah knew that he was a cupbearer, and the only thing he had was access to the king, albeit he's just a cupbearer, a trusted friend of the king, but nonetheless just a cupbearer. Going back to what you have is important because without that, you are in a guessing game. You're gambling because you're not sure what the next stages of life will be. By identifying what you have, the essentials that you have, your faith, when you know clearly my faith is important, and identifying that, my relationships are important, my health is important, my livelihood is important, defining that and going back to those, not just identifying them, not just focusing them, but constantly going back to them because it's very easy to gravitate back to the non-essentials, hence the complexity. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1, "In the month of Nisan, to the 20th year of King Artaxerxes," this is the king that he was serving, when wine was brought for him, "I took the wine." He drank the wine just to make sure that there was no poison in it, and he gave it to the king. Now, he said, "I had never been sad in the presence of the king before. And so the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing more than sadness of heart." The king apparently has gotten favor to this man because of his service. Remember, he was just a Jewish slave. He was just a cupbearer. That was his job. His job was to drink poison in case the king was going to be assassinated. "I was very much afraid," he said. "But I said to the king, may the king live forever." Notice what happens. The king notices that he's not happy, that he's sad, but he was afraid to talk to the king and tell the king exactly how he felt because the reality was he was no one other than a Jewish slave. but decided to make things simple. And sometimes that's what it takes, guys. Be simple and address the issue. He tells the king, why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? He doesn't go and go around in circles. He directly approaches the king and says, here's my situation. Now, going back to what you have is not simply identifying or knowing exactly what you have. It's who do you have? The key relationships that are important to you. And notice what happens when he says this to the king in verse 4. The Bible tells us, the king said to me, what is it you want? In fact, if you read this chapter tonight at home, you will find that the king gives him permission to go and rebuild his city. Not only does the king do that, he writes him a letter that authorizes him to do that and allows him to get materials from the forest to bring with him to be able to rebuild the city. Simplicity is really the key when you have complexity. To know the thing that are essential, to keep going back to them whenever you find yourself. And please, not just go back to them, go back to the things that you have. I often hear people these days say, what is the new normal? And I caution some of my friends to say, I don't think it's time for the new normal because life's not yet normal. I think the key is to know the new reality. The new reality we live in is this: life for the moment is volatile. Life for the moment is uncertain. Life for the moment is complex. It is very similar to the situation that Isaiah faced during the days of the exile. Jeremiah and the people of Israel faced during the exile, and finally here in the story of Nehemiah in the closing chapters of the exile. Notice where it says, go back to what you have, what do you actually have, and who do you have. But the reason why this principle is so important to you and me is because what you have is actually enough. When you think of the way God moves in people's lives, it's never about something that you don't have. It's always about something you have. Think about the boy with 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. Think about Abraham, who had nothing while he was stuck in Babylon, the original Babylon, and then all he had was his faith. Think about Joseph, who went to Egypt with nothing but a dream. And think about Moses, who had nothing but a rod. And think about the widow and Elijah with nothing but jars. And think about David who had nothing but a slingshot. The question for you is, what do you have? Not only what do you have, who do you have? And do you believe that God can move with whatever you have, how little or limited, whatever that livelihood may be, whatever your spiritual condition may be, your relationships, or even your health? And why do you believe these? The story of Nehemiah continues in verse 11. He says, give your servant success today. And today is start now. In other words, don't just go back to the essentials. When the world is complex, go back to the essentials. Identify the non-essentials. Identify the timeless. Focus on the essentials and keep going back to the thing that you have. And believe that God will move on your behalf. But the third key is start now. Nehemiah chapter 3 opens up with really a word that is repeated 29 times in succession in one chapter. And that word is the word repair. And that's what you need to do when you are starting to simplify life, is you've got to go and repair things. Repair is different from building. Repair is removing certain things that are broken. When Nehemiah arrived in Jerusalem, the walls were broken. The doors were burned down. The foundations were a mess. And you need to start by repairing, removing what is broken, fixing them, and gradually putting them into action. And that goes for our complex lives. Check your spiritual life. Are there areas that are broken? How is your prayer life? Where has it been broken? How is your time in meditating the Word and reading the Bible? Has it been broken? Does it need repair? How is your time in declaring and really proclaiming what Jesus has done for you, that your sins, past, present, and future, have been washed and forgiven? Because every time you repair that, you're able to move on with life. Now notice, we're in Nehemiah chapter 3. The word repair is mentioned 29 times, but there's also another word, and that word is rebuild. Rebuild is mentioned 7 times in the same chapter. In other words, starting now is not just repairing, it's also about rebuilding. Rebuilding is different from repairing. Rebuilding is like laying bricks one at a time. It takes time to rebuild. It takes time to repair. It takes time to rebuild, which is why you want to start now. The point is, as Nehemiah moved forward in life, he didn't just repair, he didn't just rebuild. There's a third word mentioned in the same chapter, and that's the word restore. Restore is mentioned twice because the reality is that's how life works. We repair, we rebuild, and as we do that, life is restored. And the complexities of life are held at bay because we know exactly what the essentials are, and we keep going back to those essentials as the basis of a life that has been restored. The three keys for simplicity are go back to the essentials. Identify the non-essentials, the timeless, and focus on those. Go back to what you have. And finally, start now. You're probably saying, Pastor, I haven't been building on the essentials, and I haven't been going back to what I have. Well, the point is, start now. It's kind of like the question, when is it the best time to plant a tree? And the correct answer is 10 years ago. Now, if you didn't do that, when is the next best time to plant a tree? The answer is now. In other words, start now. What is holding you back from repairing and rebuilding with simplicity? What is the thing that you're holding on to in the past that's telling you, this is where I keep going to, rather than leaving those and identifying the essentials and going to those essentials and living in those essentials? Jesus is an amazing God. His message is one of simplicity. In fact, Jesus is the ultimate revolutionary of simplicity. It starts out his story as a carpenter's son. And he's just a carpenter's son, and yet he taught the world. He never traveled in a plane. He never left Israel. His life was very simple, and yet he changed the world. His first disciples were fishermen. They weren't the brightest of the brightest, but because he taught in very simple ways, they understood. The complex teachings of the Sabbath, he simplified by flipping it and simply saying, man was not made for the Sabbath was made for man. Complex teachings are simplified in parables, and even children understand Jesus. The Samaritan woman understood it by just explaining almost like a bottle of water. The Ten Commandments, he said, they're not really 10, they're just 2 of them. Love God and love people, and you got it right. And finally he said, in order so you never forget me, communion, a bread and a cup. Jesus taught with great simplicity. And Colossians chapter 1:17 says, he's before all things, and in him all things hold together. Now it's interesting what that verse says. In Jesus Christ, the entirety of life, all of creation, the entirety of the universe, and everything we have holds together. Simplicity is really not simple. Simplicity is someone's taking care of the complexity of life so that you can enjoy a simple life. Jesus is holding together life for you so that you can enjoy the simple life that you were supposed to have. It's kind of like a father who works out and goes out and earns a livelihood to provide simplicity for his wife and children. And that's you and me, because we need someone who will do that for us. And that's who Jesus is. As I close this moment of proclaim, I want to ask you to join me in the word of prayer. Lord Jesus, we proclaim that you have supremacy over all things. For you were before all things, and in you, all things hold together. Thank you for simplifying our complicated, complex lives. And thank you that in you, we have all things that is essential. All things that are essentials are in us. We have what is timeless. God, we have everything that we need for godliness and life. And God, we thank you that the quality of life is to be enjoyed forever. You make things, all things possible for us. Even the limited resources we have become unlimited. You are the repairer of our broken walls and foundations. Only you restore our lives. And in your name, Jesus, we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Every Nation Singapore podcast. We hope you've been blessed by today's message. For more information, visit everynation.org.sg.